Welcome to part three of our trilogy with Dr. Douglas Politz of Tampa General Hospital. In our final podcast today, one of the world's most accomplished and respected parathyroid surgeons is going to explain persistent hyperthyroidism. Basically, if surgery fails, what's next? I'm Scott Webb, and welcome to MDCast by Tampa General Hospital, a go-to listening location for specialized physician-to-physician content and a valuable learning tool for world-class healthcare. So, Dr. Politz, it's so great to have you back on. This is the third in a series. You did fake news, and then last time we kind of rolled up our sleeves a little bit and got more into parathyroid disease, who has it, when it's, you know, a good time to reach out for an expert for surgery and so on. And in this one, we're going to talk about persistent hyperparathyroidism in the context of we've had surgery, now what do we do, right? But I think it's important before we really get rolling here, maybe you can just take us through how do you do this surgery, what's involved, and that maybe will inform us at least to the extent that we'll understand why something like this might actually fail, even in the hands of a world-renowned expert like yourself.
All right, so it's exactly the title would say. Surgery failed, so now what?
Okay, right.
Well, nobody can cure every last person whom they operate on for this. So it's helpful to understand how you have to attack this problem surgically. Okay, so we're dealing with four parathyroid glands. And the first operation for this was 1925. So as I said in the first podcast, this isn't a biblical disease. This is just 100 years old that we've actually operated for this. And the strategy is this. Remember, the problem is that there's a tumor, not cancer, but a tumor in the neck that is producing too much hormone, parathyroid hormone. And so the whole object of surgery is to remove the source of all this excess parathyroid hormone, okay? We know that our scanning techniques really, they only show you about half of these tumors, okay? The other half of them just escape detection. The technology is just not there, okay? And the way this was for 60, 70 years was to go operate in the neck, make an incision, basically under the Adam's apple, and you go and you look for, it's called an exploration in the terms that they first started using back in the 20s and 30s, a parathyroid exploration. Go and find the four parathyroid glands and the tumor gets removed. And you note that the other ones are normal, or the two tumors get removed, or the three, okay? When the imaging came along, okay, well, obviously, backtracking just a bit there, you then check the person's parathyroid hormone level and calcium when they come back to your clinic later, and you see that it all returned to normal, and you know the operation succeeded. That's the way that was done, okay? And now, when we went through the 90s is when the parathyroid surgery really was revolutionized, and it moved toward a minimally invasive era that we are now in, as almost every area of surgery has gone to minimally invasive surgeries. But with this one, we are now using scanning techniques to see if it will show you one tumor there. We know most of these patients have one tumor, about 70-75% of them have one tumor. And so what became popularized in the 90s was to see if you could see this on a scan. And if it did, let's say it would show you one tumor on the right side, then surgeons started to say, okay, well, we're going to operate, take that one out, and then we will check right then and there a blood test to see if the person, if that patient's parathyroid hormone level falls, as we would hope it would, from removing the source of this excess parathyroid hormone. Okay? Well, that is one way to do this. Another way is to use a little radioactivity detecting probe to see, you get an injection of a radioactive substance, sestamibi. It shows up on a scan. In some of these tumors, they will show up on a scan because they have accumulated this radioactive dye. And then you are able to go and use this little Geiger counter in the operating room to help with some of the decision making in the operating room. That's probably as much as we have to touch on right here. And then what the strategy of minimally invasive surgery was, if that hormone level falls, well, then you can stop there after removing that one and stay on just one side of the neck, and the other side of the neck is not operated on. And you've basically been able to fix the problem by doing about half the work, okay? Therefore, minimally invasive. So the old-fashioned way is go find all four of the parathyroid glands. Then the more minimally invasive way is to just operate on one half of the neck and use some sort of adjunct, whether it's this gamma probe or whether it's measuring the hormone. and see if you have in fact succeeded. We actually now have almost gone back, in my practice, Dr. Lopez and myself, we've kind of gone back to checking each one of the parathyroid glands, all four of them, and operating on both sides of the neck because of the shortfalls of some of these methodologies of trying to basically cut it short and just do about half the operation.
Yeah, and I'm thinking of a scenario here I want to present to you, a little bit of a hypothetical, but I'm sure a very common example. So let's just say we go in for surgery and my surgeon takes out, you know, one, and she looks at the other three parathyroid glands and they all appear to be normal. And yet when we get back to the office and do the testing, my calcium levels are still high. How can that be?
Okay, well, that's the theme of this podcast, is the first surgery failed. So what do we do now?
Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot of these kind of cases have gravitated to me over the years, just as a function of doing so much of this. And so what you end up in is trying to evaluate a case like that is detective work. And you really get in there and dig into those reports, the pathology report, where you see what the pathologist, the microscope doctor, basically, who has gone in and looked at those specimens that were submitted. Were specimens submitted other than the tumor? That's an important part of this as well. You were saying that the person's surgeon took out the tumor and saw the other three. Well, a lot of things in the neck look alike. A little piece of fat can look like a parathyroid gland. So can a lymph node or part of the thyroid gland. There are other tissues in the neck that can all really look very similar to a parathyroid gland, and the differences can be very subtle. So one of the things that we do is Dr. Lopez and I will look at those other parathyroid glands and rather quickly, and we'll find them because after all this time, we figured out where they hide, and we'll take a little piece of it, tiny little biopsies of the normal parathyroid glands as you find them, gives you a pathology report because the pathologist will then give us a report that says left upper parathyroid tissue identified. In other words, what I was looking at in the body was in fact a parathyroid gland. It wasn't a little piece of fat. It was not a lymph node. It wasn't a piece of thyroid. And it's a double check. It's another confirmation. So that's where these evaluating cases like this one you described, that's where I start. And I say, okay, well, wait a minute. Nothing else was submitted. So it's possible that the first surgeon, she might have thought that something was a parathyroid, and it just, you know, you can get fooled. You can be fooled. It was a piece of fat. It was something else. And so in that circumstance, you say, okay, I can only assume the ones that I have a report that tells me that that was found. And now one of these others may have been a parathyroid tumor, and it just never was actually seen because something else was assumed to have been that parathyroid gland.
Yeah, I see what you mean. And so I'm thinking about this from two perspectives. From the patient's perspective, this sort of maze or Easter egg hunt or whatever sort of metaphor we would use doesn't sound all that fun. But for the doctor, for you guys, men and women, the experts in the field, you know, I'm sure this is, I may put this in air quotes, a fun in a way, right? The challenge is finding all four, making sure they're really parathyroid glands, and knowing for certain whether you have to send a little piece, you know, off to be biopsied or whatever. I'm sure that there's a reason you've done 8,500 plus of these, that it's kind of a fun challenge, right?
This is an area of surgery, honestly, that for decades, I mean, nearing a century, that has baffled and really frustrated so many surgeons. In my career, I've run into surgeons that say, I don't even want to fool with parathyroid surgery. It's hard to find these things, and I don't want to end up in there where I'm operating for 4 or 5 hours trying to find this little tiny thing the size of a grain of rice. I don't want to do it. I'm just going to send it to you guys or something like that, or an expert closer to them in California or something like that. And so, yes, it's so satisfying to be able to not only find them, but find them very quickly now. I mean, to be able to make an incision and within about 10, 15 minutes, you've already found all four of these things, solved the problem, you just need to close the wound. That's a far cry from what used to be done with this disease, where it would take 5-6 hours to operate and the problem's still not solved and the person has a voice that they can't talk or there's some other problem that has developed.
Definitely. So, all right, let's say you have to go back in, right? The initial surgery, whether they, you know, found one or more, and there's still an issue, calcium still high. So, you know, you've got to go back in, or your partner has to go back in. Does that scar tissue in our necks make it harder to operate again and actually go in and address the lingering issues?
Definitely. Scar tissue, that's the one big obstacle, okay, to reoperations, to reoperative surgery, really anywhere in the body. But for these purposes, it's in the neck, and it does. And initially, scar tissue is thick and sticky and unyielding, and it doesn't let you separate things. Whereas as time goes by, it can soften and thin out and become a little bit more agreeable. And so it is much easier to operate after, say, years have gone by. Well, a lot of people don't necessarily want to sit there and wait.
They don't necessarily, you may not have
yeah,
years,
they may
right.
not want to wait yeah. years. But that it's like the best analogy I could say is if you would open up a book, you know, and you just sort of leaf through the pages of the book, but you hold some old-fashioned Elmer's glue and squeeze it down in between those pages, okay, after they squeeze it down through those pages as you're leafing through, and then you kind of slam the book shut. Well, if you go right back in, okay, you go right back in and try to separate those pages, you can do it. But if after a week or so, you know, it's just going to, those pages are going to start ripping, okay, because it's that glue has set. And it'll stay that way for a long, long time until you get way down the road, and then maybe you might be able to tease some of those pages apart. It's a good analogy of what working with scar tissue is like, and it can make it a lot more difficult to try to fix the problem if you have a lot of scar tissue, meaning someone operated all over the neck, both sides, all quadrants of the neck for 5-6 hours. Boy, it's hard to fix that problem.
Yeah, and it does seem pretty clear that best to try to make sure, whether it's one or more, to remove the problem the first time and not have to go back in. And I had in my list of questions for you here, and I think I know the answer to this, but let's just say we have a surgeon, local surgeon, whomever, who really only looks at the one, takes the one out. Really, you would recommend that surgeons really take the time to look at all four when possible, right?
If they're really experienced at doing this.
Right, right.
So from my perspective, as someone who's done so much of this, yes, I want to see all four of those parathyroid glands. That person has come to me as a world expert. I want to fix this problem for them and have every assurance that it's fixed and they can go on with their lives. But as we've mentioned in the previous podcast, or maybe even earlier in this one, as we've mentioned, a local surgeon who maybe doesn't do a whole lot of this kind of operation, but they have a patient who can't go. And this is a person who is in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and they can't fly to Tampa. They can't leave their lives unattended like that. And you're going to operate on them there. Fine. If you see it on a scan, just go to that one. That's okay. I'm all right with that. I don't want a surgeon who's not really comfortable finding the parathyroid glands, all four of them, to go looking for them, because it's going to stir up so much scar tissue if you do too much of that. Stick to that one little area, take it out, and you're going to fix about 70 to 75% of these.
Yeah, that was definitely in our last one, and we talked about that. It's like, if you find the one, you're good. Go ahead, close up, right?
You're yeah. good if you are not particularly experienced at doing this, and you're just trying to help this person that can't get to an expert. Go ahead, take out that one and be done with it. Don't go spending a whole lot of time looking in other places, because it's going to produce scar tissue that then is going to make it harder for me to fix them down the road if they're one of those 20-25% of people that weren't fixed with a first operation. That would be the lesson I would try to get across in that circumstance.
Yeah, and that's a good lesson, to be sure. So what about intraoperative PTH? Wouldn't that make the cure rate higher?
Well, that's the thing that we were talking about came along in the 1990s. It is a clever way to address this problem. It really is. It's, you know, we're trying to take out the source of all this extra parathyroid hormone. And you take out a tumor and you check their blood for your parathyroid hormone. And you say, wow, okay, this has fallen by 75%, for instance, from what it was before we took that tumor out. Okay. It just does not fix enough of them to make me comfortable. I want to go and check each one of the others because I can do it quickly. I can find an answer. Just because that parathyroid hormone level has fallen appropriately doesn't mean there's not another parathyroid tumor. That's one of the lessons we've learned from that technique. And sometimes it will, in fact, stay up and stay high, and the problem is fixed. And so it's not necessarily the most reliable way. It's not more reliable than actually seeing all four of the parathyroid glands. But it, like the other thing we talked about, it's going to fix a lot of people with this. If there are surgeons who use that technique and that they have a lot of practice with it and they have a good feel for their machine and how sensitive it is, that's fine. Remember, you're going to fix a lot of people with this disease by using that technique. That's fine. I want to fix 98, 99% of them, not 91, 92% of them. Okay. I know I can't fix 100% of them. I can't do, right. Nobody can. Okay. But I want to get 98, 99% of them fixed.
And would I have to wait for a positive scan to have another surgery?
Sometimes. That's my best answer for that one. Okay. Sometimes you do.
Okay.
And that's where, remember I talked to you earlier about how some of this is detective work? Okay. And if I look and I say, okay, I look back at an operative report where the surgeon, you know, describes line by line exactly what they did and exactly what they saw. And then I look at the pathology report. And from all of that, I see, wait a minute, the first surgeon, she didn't operate on the left side of the neck at all. But she took out both parathyroid glands on the right side. And I know that because I looked at the pathology report and it shows that both of those were parathyroid tissue. It wasn't fat or something else. And so now, if that's the patient and they still have a high calcium level and the first operation has not succeeded, well, I don't need a scan to tell me it's on the left side. She never operated on the left side and there's nothing left on the right side. So even if a scan doesn't show it in that scenario, my detective work has already told me it has to be on the left side.
Yeah, really interesting, and such a great way to put it. This whole, when we think about parathyroids and disease and hyperparathyroidism and so on, it really does seem like a lot of detective work. As you said, when you're successful at it, there's high levels of satisfaction for you, great outcomes for patients. And I'm assuming that if anybody listened to the first one of this amazing series with you, that they ended up listening to all three. So here we are at the end of the third one. What would be your final takeaways for other providers and perhaps patients who might be listening about parathyroid disease, hyperparathyroidism, the detective work, and so on? I'll leave it to you in your words.
I would say for providers, for patients as well, but for the providers that are listening to this, is when you are evaluating a patient in the office and you get that lab report back and it says 10 point something, even if it's in the lab's normal range, it is worth not dismissing that. It is worth saying, hang on a second here. What was it last year? Oh, last year was 10.3. Oh, that was still in range. What about the year before that? 10.5. That was still in range. I can tell you what I just described to you, 10.2, 10.3, 10.5, that's almost always a parathyroid tumor. Okay? And that's about as exciting as it's ever going to get for most patients with this disease. So the take-home point is that all those calcium levels of 10 point this and 10 point that, those people almost always have a parathyroid tumor, and you should be looking to send them to an endocrinologist or find an expert surgeon that needs to operate on that patient after you go ahead and get their parathyroid hormone level and confirm the diagnosis. The other thing is what we've said a few times is that is seek an expert if you're able to. If you can get to an expert, and there are a number of different people around the country that have a lot of experience with this, a number of surgeons that do. It's not a ton of them, but there are enough of them that someone just about anywhere can find their way to an expert. Obviously, Dr. Lopez and I are here in Tampa, but there are people in a couple of other areas in the country that it's worth your time. And if you are able to, by tending to things at home, having someone that can look after your kids, you have the ability to for the expenditures of the travel, it's worth it. This is one of those areas that it can be a real chore if your first operation is not successful. And now you're kind of having to battle from behind the eight ball here of trying to deal with scar tissue and trying to fix this problem when you already have had your first swing at it. That's your best chance of fixing it is the first time.
You know, this has been so great. I got to speak with you a couple of times and you've done three total. And it's one of the best parts of my job and my life is to get to speak with a world-renowned expert and learn from the experts. So I'm sure this has been great for whomever listens, be they maybe patients-to-be, but certainly other providers, when they might consider referring to you and your partner, Dr. Lopez. So great to have you on. Thank you so much for your time, and you stay well.
Thank you, Scott. Have a good day. Bye.
That's one of the world's most accomplished and respected parathyroid surgeons, Dr. Douglas Politz of Tampa General Hospital. And thank you for listening to MDCast by Tampa General Hospital, which is available on all major streaming services for free. To collect your CME, please click on the link in the description. For other CME opportunities, including live webinars, on-demand videos, and local events offered to you by Tampa General Hospital, please visit cme.tgh.org. Thanks for listening. I'm Scott Webb. Stay well.